Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Jenny. And we're so glad you're here today.
Hello, 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 Jenny.
Thank you for making it three hellos. You know how it makes me uncomfortable when you
I'm learning from the podcast.
It's the patterns thing. The numbers patterns thing.
How are you today?
How are you? Oh, I asked first.
I'm a little grumpy today, I'm going to be honest. It's been one of those mornings. I'm really struggling. This is actually an ADHD thing, but I think it's also a human thing with what to eat lately. I just like nothing sounds good to eat, like nothing. Even my go-to is like bagel with cream cheese and lox. I'm like, I don't know.
Toast? So
no, I can't. I don't know. Just everything seems
hard to imagine. Toast doesn't feel good.
I think I need like to try like a new restaurant or something. I need to like break out of my like rut of like normal stuff.
I'm doing okay. I have some sort of allergy cold situation, so I'm sure people.
Everybody, tis the season. Me too.
My lunch was good. Do you want to hear about my lunch?
I do. Yeah. Maybe it'll inspire me.
Yeah, maybe it will. We went to the market to get stuff for dinner and I bought myself a sandwich baguette, which is what it sounds like. And I hollowed it out. And I want everybody to know that when I say I hollowed it out, I ate the inside. I didn't throw it away.
No, that's, yeah.
I love the inside. Yeah. If I could make like a taco that had like bread inside, like I would eat that. So I held it out and then I did goat cheese and I had some like three slices of pepperoni left over from making Thomas's lunch for tomorrow. Some tomatoes cut up, some olives and some Vidalia onions, like pickled onions. It was really good. I've noticed that in this country, their sandwiches aren't quite as tall. It's more like a French style sandwich. It's pretty flat. And I kind of like that because I love bread, like Oprah, much like Oprah. I love bread. And I love sandwiches. So that's what I had.
We had such an amazing conversation with Susan Gold. I've actually interacted with Susan for years, kind of in the PR world. And then I didn't really know her story. And she came to us and I felt like it was this gift of a story that was just laid. We sat there, Jenny and I, you should have seen us, our mouths open, listening. She is not only is her life story like Forrest Gump and like amazing, but like,
yeah, she's like met everybody has, like, and met everybody. It was like the beginning of Fox News.
But like, she is such a good storyteller. Like you are going to be just swept away. Like I highly suggest grabbing a cup of coffee, getting a good like sandwich and sitting down and listening to this episode because it is a beautiful piece of storytelling. And we were just blown away.
It was wonderful. And she is such a light and she's working on becoming a life coach, which I think is so appropriate. She's so engaging and loving and
warm.
I just, you know, it was another one where we were like, thank you podcast for bringing people into our orbit because these people that we get to interact with, it's like these little like blessings.
Totally. So we hope you enjoyed the episode. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe because it helps us out. And we're always here for you. We'd love to hear what you think. So enjoy Susan Gold. Hello, Susan. We are so happy to have you here today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Susan Gold is the founder of a talent brokerage firm, Celebrity Talent. She has produced both high-profile events as well as celebrity-focused interviews and segments for AMC, Bravo, and the Sundance Channel, as well as provided talent for NBC, VH1, A&E, and IFC. Susan is a former triathlete and most proudly a single mom. Susan, we are so thrilled to talk to you today. Can you take us back to the beginning of your fresh start story?
Sure. There have been so many fresh starts in my career, in my lifetime. So I'm going to try to be concise. I think the first fresh start was when I left the home I grew up in the morning after I graduated from high school. It was a really rough environment. I lived in a small town in rural Pennsylvania, and I was in the middle of five children with two brilliant but exceptionally rattled adults at the helm. And I really feel we come in with a trajectory and a plan for this life, you know, and lessons. And I smacked myself into really challenging circumstances, but I'm really, really blessed. And I see it from new perspective decades later as a real gift for soul evolution, for my personal evolution. And I really pay homage to my parents for taking on the role they did and my brothers and sister. So I left the morning after high school graduation, headed for the Jersey Shore and was thrilled to be there. And then on to college, but really I couldn't wait to get to New York City. That's what I really wanted. Like, I was on my belly on the beanbag chair in the basement watching Barbara Walters and going, that's what I want. That's where I want to be. So sophomore year, I negotiated my way out of college for an internship in New York City. And I ended up going there after college. And Barbara Walters became one of my clients. I did exercise training on the side, personal training. I was working at ICM, which is a large talent agency, and exercise training on the side. And the woman that ran the company got the call and she's like, I can't do it. And I'm like, okay. And the next fresh start really was I left ICM. You couldn't really learn a lot. The agent that I was working for formed his own talent agency and asked me to join him. And I went and I was learning to negotiate talent deals, and I would have never had that opportunity while I was in that big corporate structure.
Yeah.
But he also had a little issue, a little sexual compulsion, addiction issue, and used to call young women in the afternoon to audition and ask me to leave. It was really awkward, and inappropriate. And then he tried it with me and I showed up to train Barbara the next morning and was so rattled, and she could tell. And I ended up spilling the beans, and she wanted to come with me to confront him.
Oh my God, what a story. That is, wow.
Yeah. So I ended up leaving, obviously. I went back the next night to get some things that I'd left, and he had changed the locks on the door. So I knew I had to move on. And that's the next fresh start. I launched my own talent brokerage firm. I had no clients. I think I had maybe 3 months of cash in the bank, which was a lot for me then. And I just had belief. And I went on a cold calling mission with a vengeance. And I ended up doing a deal with Donnie Deutsch, who's a bit of a TV personality.
Yeah.
So, but back then, Donnie was running his dad's ad agency. And he wanted Andy Warhol to do an on-camera TV commercial and couldn't get him to do it. And I'm like, well, let me try. So I dressed up and I went down to the factory because I couldn't get anybody to answer the phone. And I knocked on the door.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And Fred answered. Fred answered the door, who was Andy's longtime manager. I told him why I was there. And he said, okay, come back tomorrow and I'll let you talk to Andy. So I did. I showed up the next day, same time. And I'm sitting in the foyer, and he goes, and he comes out of this main room. And he goes, okay, Andy, we'll see you now. So I like go in there, you know, little girl from Pennsylvania. I feel like I have dirt on my combat boots. Mm-hmm. And he's in the center of the studio, like penciling away, like ferociously. And these three pugs are running around the studio, and he can't get enough of the pugs. Now I'm like blabbling on about what I'm there for. And he's not having any of it. Like there's no connection whatsoever. And he's picking up the pugs as they're jumping in the arms. And I finally, he looks up at me, he goes, why should I do this? And I said, because you can have the pugs in the shot with you. And he looked at them, he looked at me, he goes, I'll do it. That was really like my calling card into celebrity attachment for all sorts of projects. And I ended up doing it for Roger Ailes, who had launched a talk network called America's Talking, which was over the bridge. And I worked for CNBC and America's Talking in the promos department. And Roger wanted celebrities on the network doing promos to like sort of weight the brand. Like this was way before it was cool, right? Like everybody does that now. And I couldn't get anybody to come. So I got the idea to go to a red carpet event, interview the talent, and then have them look to camera and say their name, and they were watching America's Talking. And this is before this was like commonplace and publicists will start.
This was like early Cameo. It's like Cameo now, right?
Oh my God. Oh my God. So I grabbed the photographer and off we went. And it was so successful. Roger said, name the show you want to produce on. So I ended up producing, and then America's Talking folded, and he launched Fox News Channel and invited me to join there. And that was a bit of a fresh start. But the real fresh start was when I got a call from a longtime friend, and she said, come to LA. I'm launching a syndicated talk show and I need you to bring talent to the table. And I said, yes, like immediately. Like, she called me in the evening, you know, it was early afternoon, her time is evening, my time. I was just like, I'm doing it. I'm going. So, and I knew nobody but her in LA and her partner. And I was on the plane thinking, what did I just do? But I sort of had that intuition that I was going to go to LA. And I eventually learned how to punch buttons and did lots of work for Bravo and AMC and, you know, mostly entertainment stuff, mostly reality stuff. But I quickly learned why I was brought to LA, and that was to meet one of the biggest gurus of my life, who is my ex-husband. He had spent time in New York too, and I think maybe we crossed ships there. There was some kind of magnet, like I felt like I knew him before. And I really felt hard. I thought, this is finally the one. He said everything I wanted him to say. And I used to think, wow, you're like right out of the movies. And he really was, because he had no persona. What I ultimately learned was I had fallen in love with a narcissist, someone who could not see outside of themselves. And I totally loved him. And it was totally familiar to me. I mean, that's what I had grown up with, serving that kind of personality. And so I didn't understand. And when I realized it was horrific, we had had a child together. I bought a home for our family and maintained it. And when I realized it was devastating and I didn't want the marriage to end and I wanted to do everything I could to save it, I didn't want a fresh start. Believe me, I wanted this to work. And I was pretty controlling and willful.
And powerful and tenacious, like all the things.
Got chutzpah. You have a lot of chutzpah.
But I didn't know it. I didn't know I was powerful. People would say that to me. And on the inside, I just felt like I had duct tape and sticky paper holding me together. And I was just a gerbil on that wheel, running as fast as I could to piece it all together. Because I was so afraid of abandonment. I was so afraid to be left. And I was really insecure, especially when it came to partnership. And I always, I always carried the weight, you know, I always carried more than my fair share. So it seemed natural, but literally I felt like I was being flattened because I was bringing in the lion's share of the income and creating it on my own, because I couldn't do the corporate thing. I did it at ICM and I did it at Fox for 2 years and it just didn't fit. I couldn't figure it out. I didn't understand what like people did all day and why they were staying there till 7:30 when there was really nothing happening. It was like, why are you posing? There's so much life to live. You know, I'd be like, get the work done. And like, let's go. It's 4:30. Who cares?
Right. I mean, you also seem like somebody that like gets her work done, is super smart, like knows how to get it done. Like, let's get it done before lunch and like go get lunch and then like see what the day is going to bring us. Why are we in this office all day?
You're so right. And I have my mom to thank for that, because she used to, she ended up being a single mom, even though our dad lived in the same town. She had to set up a lot like I did, like doing the lion's share and working, but she would leave these long notes. And for the boys, it'd be like, go mow the lawn. And for me, it'd be like, dust, vacuum the downstairs, take everything on the stairs up, you know, do the laundry, like all these things that seemed overwhelming for a 6-year-old. But it actually served me in adulthood. Like, I can get a lot done. I can multitask. So here I was in this marriage that I knew was not good for me. I Googled the word narcissist. I don't know. That was like divine inspiration, and learned everything I could about narcissism and woke up to the fact that I was living with one. And it was horrific. And his mask came off. He was one persona And then mm-hmm. when the actual confrontation began, it was like Medusa. I was like, yep. nasty. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I got this brainiac idea that I was going to make him come to the table with what's called a post-nuptial agreement mm-hmm. to try to bring integrity in the financial side of the relationship and protect what assets I yeah. had, which basically in the state of California was our home.
Yeah.
And we got to the last point of the negotiation on this agreement, and I thought my marriage was saved. I thought it was really going to happen, and I was so happy. And mm-hmm. he folded his arms and he stared at me with that cold stare that
the only dead eyes, the dead eyes.
Yeah. You know.
Oh, I know.
And he said, I'm hiring an attorney and I'm filing for divorce. And that intuitive voice inside me said, we are doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. And I knew like that was the fresh start. And it was also fresh hell because he would not leave the master bedroom. Mm-hmm. I ended up on a mattress on a floor of a partial conversion in the garage of a home I bought and paid for and maintained for a family. And I needed that billboard to fall on my head to wake me up yeah. and say, hey, this isn't right. You have to, yeah. you can do better. You deserve better.
Yeah.
And a friend said, get ready. I mean, I was an endurance athlete. I'd done multiple marathons, triathlons, and I needed that endurance experience to get through that divorce. She said, this is going to be like an endurance race.
Yeah.
And in my quest with learning about narcissism, I found a woman in Australia who had this form of actual body work where you go inside and work internally, and it changes the neural pathways and the cellular structure, because it was almost like some kind of past life experience that I felt like I was going to die yeah. if I didn't have mm-hmm. a man in my life. And mm-hmm. here I was like, slinging the load and feeling like I'm not going to survive without this yeah. setup. Yeah. So I had this beaten, wounded little girl inside of me that was so wrapped in barbed wire. And guys, I actually did have a lot of, I got clean when I was 25. I went into therapy. I skipped over all that stuff because yeah. there is a lot of content. And I don't want to take the whole show.
No, we love it.
But yeah, I did get sober, clean okay. and sober when I was 25, and I went into therapy. But when I discovered who my husband really was, I found myself square one right back where I was. And I also had struggle with my mental health. I had clinical depression. At 4.5 years sober, I was hospitalized for clinical depression, and I thought I was going to take myself out. There were a couple of exit points that I could have chose, yeah. but I decided to stay on planet and stay the course.
Olivia and I were just talking about this the other day, relating to her, of like, you often when you start your journey, like when you got clean and you went to therapy when you were 25, you think that the issue is one thing, and it is. And you start down and you pursue that path, and you go down and you get as far down that path as you possibly can. And it's not until other factors come into your life and push other buttons, like your husband, that you're like, oh, there was a whole other layer under there that I never knew existed and I have to deal with. And it's like this oh shit moment, but it's exciting and it's sad and it's beautiful. And it's all of those things where then you're like, now I have to go, okay, I healed like the 17-year-old version of me. Now I've got to go heal the 6-year-old version of me and go reparent her and go deal with that, because it's like, it's this constant thing where we're just trying to get back to like yeah. the youngest version of us that got hurt, really.
Truly. And it is a process. I mean, I knew that still quiet voice within me always was like, you're yeah. giving your power away.
Yeah.
You're giving yeah. your power away. You know, because I was always really insecure when it came to partnership and being abandoned. I'd say being abandoned and not realizing my power have been my two biggest core yeah. issues. But I also celebrate that. Like, what yeah. a great gift to come in to realize it and to be brave enough to open your eyes and be willing to work on it.
Yes.
A lot of people never do that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I could have stayed in that marriage and hid, but I chose to put everything on the line. In the state of California, it doesn't matter who contributed what. It's a 50-50 split. And we were over 10 years married. Mm-hmm. And even the attorney said, this has got to change. You know, they're seeing so many man-child situations coming to the table.
Problem is when you're very like insecure in your attachment, and then you're also a person that was taught from a young age to overproduce and over like love and help and care, over serve and caretake. It's very easy to stay in those relationships because we know it. Like there's a home there, but is that home safe? You know, is that the home that we want to keep rebuilding?
And ultimately it was not. And I knew it to the core of my being. Right. And the universe said, stop, no more. You're going to have a fresh start, whether you like it or not. And it took a year, guys. It, you know, as a longtime meditator, I'd been on week-long silent meditation retreats. And the suggested remedy when you're going through a divorce with a narcissist is no contact or modified contact if you have children. Yeah. So that means in writing. And this gentleman would not leave the home until he got his check. So it was 1 year where I took everything and put it into play that I knew, my endurance training, my long time meditating. I kept silent, like I was on silent meditation retreat, and that little partial conversion in the garage became my monastery. And I dove deep into work and healing and dropping the layers of guilt and shame and rage and lack, and worked on the self-esteem and realized who I was. And the miracles happened. I mean, I didn't know how I was going to afford those legal bills that were coming in every month. And God forbid, I'd get up in the middle of the night and look at the email and there was the invoice. And magically, or maybe not so, I made one of the biggest deals in my career and everything was paid for. My husband was a bit of a hoarder and collector. So our garage was the area outside this partial conversion was floor to ceiling with records and DVDs and posters and collectibles that he was going to sell at one point. And you could barely get to the washer dryer. You sort of had to like dig your way through. All that went, and I converted that garage and it became an income suite, and it paid for more than half of my mortgage, my insurance, and my taxes. So it just like the universe came in and supported me and said, yeah, we're going to do it. You're going to go forward.
That's amazing.
So my son was probably 10 then. And, you know, my husband did participate, but basically I was a single mom. And ultimately my son like slowed down with the visits. So I sort of mostly was a single mom and felt the responsibility of it, but it was also a time of great healing. And it was the first time, guys, that I was not in a relationship. Cause like since first grade and Billy Fritz, I always had some boy that gave me attention, you know, and this was the first time that, and I went out on one date. It was like really looked good on paper, you know, Academy Award winning director, Emmy producer. And the date came and he couldn't come 15 minutes to pick me up. I lived in Burbank. He lived in Sherman Oaks. The event was over in Santa Monica. And I was like, red flag. You know, so I went on the date and I was like, yeah, no, this isn't the right one. So I actually learned something and was willing to draw a boundary. But I drew it harsh. I drew it very harshly. And I knew my trust button was completely broken. And I knew I couldn't stay with this kind of focus on my son. I mean, it was there 300% for a mom and got him into the right college and all that stuff. But I knew that I was shutting off this emotional side to an open-heartedness. So I ended up taking an online course, and it was during COVID. And everybody in the course, I invited to a 15-minute conversation, except the two people that lived in LA, I invited them to coffee and became friends with one, very close friends. And we ended up like falling in love. Well, he had lost his wife after a 5-year battle with cancer. She had been diagnosed at stage 3.5, and I never met her. I certainly didn't know him. On paper, it doesn't look like we'd be a match at all. But like diagnosed at stage 3.5 colon cancer, and he kept her alive for 5 years. He loved her. She loved him. Oh. I don't know what this is. Like, I wanted to murder my husband by the end, you know? And and I saw that in my, I saw it in my parents too. I don't know what a loving, kind, supportive relationship was. I mean, people would see them, they were 20 years married, and say, did you just meet each other? And he's very loving and has such a kind heart. Even though I continue to look for those signals, okay, where am I going to get? Where is he? No, he's very solid. Yeah. So dreams come true for sure.
Does he live in Montana with you? Is he there with you?
We moved together. Yeah.
Good.
And we have a dog, my dog. She's a rescue. Ours was her fourth home in 5 years. She's been with us 10 years now. And his two cats. So we're a blended family. And I had no intention of leaving LA until my son graduated from college. He's going to school in California. And I just got that inkling in my stomach of, wow, it doesn't feel right. Feels like there's a new chapter coming, but I couldn't really put my finger on it.
Yeah.
And Adam was all about Montana, 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 Montana. He had been here a few times. This is my partner. And I kept like poo-pooing it. So I said, let's go look at West Virginia because it's so beautiful there and it's really affordable right now. And they were actually paying people to move to West Virginia if you had a work from home business. So we went and looked at it and it was gorgeous, but we decided it really wasn't for us and went back to LA and came to look at Montana in mid-January. Like, I didn't want any ruse. I wanted to see it at its worst. And it was like I was coming to Camelot or Brigadoon. It's so magical. It's Lost Horizon. I am surrounded in mountains. On one side, it looks like the Nepali coast in Kauai. On the backside, it looks like the Swiss Alps because the Canadian Rockies are there. And in the front of my house, it looks like Tuscany. It's so beautiful. And we were both led here for a complete fresh start together because this is now ours. Yeah. You know, Burbank, California, where I live, Granada Hills, where he lived, the Valley, San Fernando Valley. That's where he spent his time with his wife. That's where I spent my time with my ex-husband. We were happy together there, but it's just, it felt like something wasn't exactly right. And it took a lot of courage to put my house on the market after everything I'd gone through. I basically took it down to the studs after my husband left, you know, and was so proud, but it was time to release it and also to come to a new place in my career. I'd been told for years that I needed to write a book. And I was like, oh, do I need to go through that agony for a PR tool? Really? Like, but finally I heard it so often that I decided, okay, I'm going to do it. And I finished it while I'm here and it's going to be published in 2023.
Amazing.
And it basically tells the story of taking traumatic experience and turning it into freedom. So I'm really proud of it. And I'm transitioning out. After producing for television, and it got so fierce and cutthroat, like the reality stuff just, it was nasty. And I transitioned into PR, sort of more from a biz dev media outreach perspective.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really great. And I was doing great work, but it didn't feel whole. And just naturally, like, I've coached people and helped people through all sorts of things. Like, I've survived all sorts of stuff, every kind of abuse imaginable, and entrepreneurship and divorcing a narcissist and being a single mom and, you know, all that stuff. So I'm like, I think I can put this to you. So I finished the book, it got picked up, it'll be distributed, and I'm on my way.
What were the things in your marriage that kind of started to make your intuition perk up and go, something's not right here? And like, I kind of have to keep my eye on this.
So the physical expression was I was carrying 9 grocery bags in from the car. My car was parked on the street because there was only room for one car in the driveway. Like that's a physical metaphor.
The
fact that my ex was living in the master bedroom while I was in the garage, that's another metaphor for the truth of what was going on within the relationship. And God bless him. He just did not have a clue. He did not understand. And he had the only office in the house. I paid for an office outside of the house when our son was small. I paid for the nanny. He got used to the nanny. You know, it just, and I just expected that was the way it went. So what really happened was once our son was 5 and we bought our first home, I couldn't hide those things anymore. Like the tax bill was coming due and I didn't know where that money was coming from. And I knew I couldn't ask him for it.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I was responsible. But I also want to say there, I want to take responsibility because I also would not allow myself to be vulnerable to need because those needs had been rejected early on. And that was too painful a place to go.
Were you in my therapy session yesterday, Susan? Because that's exactly literally what we talked about. Yeah, 100%. And you are probably a fiercely independent person, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Nasty independent. Yeah. I feel sorry for my partner. He's got it rough. Yeah.
I think those are all such interesting examples because when you talk to people who have been with a narcissist, there are a lot of examples like that. I mean, things you said exactly happened to me in a lot of ways as well. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about with that mirroring, you know, you end up falling in love really with yourself, right? That's the person that they are. They are completely mirroring you. So everything that's shiny and wonderful and beautiful and warm. And like you said, you felt like you had connected before. That's because you had, because you're connecting with you. Right. And that's kind of the scary part about narcissism. And when that mask comes off, like you said, it is like, what is happening here? And I think your metaphor of the reality you lived of like literally kind of living in the doghouse, right, was that they strip you down to your, I mean, your humanity is gone, you know? And so I would imagine for you who like had this like career and you're doing all these amazing things and you were sober and, you know, probably doing all the parenting, I'm guessing, to then like have this inside of you be totally beaten down. How did you work your way back up to building that inside of yourself back up again?
So I was very fortunate in finding that system out of Australia. The woman's name is Melanie Tonya Evans, and I highly recommend her. She's got a program called Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Program, NARP. And it literally goes into your body. I don't know about you guys, but I respond somatically. Most of my, most everything is held in my body and I respond emotionally from my body parts. And this program basically helped me to a point where I could find some semblance of self and energy again, because I've literally been drained by this energy. And I also took the suggestion of no communication, because the narcissist knows every button and how to push it and how to draw you back in, and you cannot engage. It was so difficult. It felt so unjust. Here I was, I had carried most of the weight, and this guy was trying to take everything he could. He went around and inventoried every item in our home and put a dollar value on it and expected me to pay in the divorce settlement. The attorney said I'd never seen anything like this before. Like it just felt so unjust, but I had to believe that if I just continued and if I went back, narcissists are known to punish. So I knew going back was not a solution. It was exceedingly difficult with him on the premises. We were on the same premises.
Yep.
Using the same kitchen, but I knew what I had to do. And I just used all that training and trust and taking suggestions. And that's what got me through.
It's such a human instinct to want to be understood, right? And like seen and heard and validated. So like when they're saying, when the narcissist is arguing with you and you're like, no, you're not understanding it, you've gotten it all wrong, it just is so natural to like argue with them. And it's so counterintuitive to be like, it doesn't matter. I'm just gonna, I gotta gray rock them, right? Or I gotta just like, they give them nothing to hang on to, nothing to pick at. But it's so tough to just know that like, you know what's right and that has to be enough.
Just keep going towards the truth, right, and trusting that there would be a miracle and a fresh start on the other end. And it wasn't easy. And I felt frozen for quite a long while. I was traumatized.
Yeah,
it was very traumatic to go through that. And it takes a while to unfreeze that, to allow yourself that time and really serve yourself and grow your own being. And I've gotten back in touch with that little girl inside of me, and she's so precious. And I've come to really love her. There is heaven on earth.
Yeah.
There is. And it comes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So what kind of coaching are you going to be doing in the next phase of your fresh start journey?
Thanks for asking. I really want to help people see their difficulty, because I've experienced it in a lot of different areas, but to see that difficulty as a gift, and how can we take it and transform it into that beauty? So you're living heaven on earth. I mean, I'm going to say it again. I do believe I came in to learn my power and to learn how to love myself and give that to others. And that's what I want to teach others. You have the power within. It's okay. You're not a victim. It feels that way. It looks that way. But let's look at this from another perspective. Yeah. I mean, God bless my husband for playing the role he did.
What was your support system like during your divorce process? You know, who kind of,
So I had a core group, but I want to take you to the last, say, 2 months when things really amp up. That's when my husband saw he's not going to get away with it. He really got desperate and pulled out the arsenal, and it got tough. So I picked a friend for each day of the week, because what happened was I felt those suicidal feelings, that depression come up again. I experienced that in my 20s and in my early 30s. So I knew what that was. And every day I would check in with an assigned person for the day. And if they weren't there and I was in trouble, I would leave a message committing to call the next friend on the list to make sure that I was okay. Mm. So that was one tool that was so valuable, especially at the end. And yeah, I did find friends that would support, family that would support. And then Saturdays were my day with my son. So I made sure we did something fun. I mean, we went to animal sanctuaries and, you know, climbing gyms and swimming pools. And, you know, like, I just found everything in Southern California we could possibly find, and really bonded with him. And actually, he said that was one of the best times of his life.
Yeah.
Because he got that kind of quality time with me.
During your fresh start journey, were there any products or things that helped you kind of along the way, whatever in parts of your life?
There were multiple different healers, channelers, therapists that I turned to that really helped me through at various different points. I mean, in the book, there's a whole workbook of exercises that match each chapter that sort of helped me through that experience. And there's a list of people that I've worked with and modalities that I've worked with. I started off with the head talk, the mind, the sort of analytical, and then I moved into the body, the more somatic. And as I mentioned, I'm a longtime meditator, and that's also been completely valuable in this whole trajectory.
I love that, because we're all about that at Fresh Starts, right? Helping people find their hype team and their experts. And you're going to have to come become a Fresh Starts expert when you get your coaching stuff off the ground. And in terms of somebody going through a fresh start in life, what would you tell them? What are your wise words?
You're safe, you're secure, and you're loved, regardless of how it feels in the moment. And you have a whole loving team that surrounds you, supporting you, rooting for you. Even though you might not viscerally see them, you can feel them. And that is the truth. And you're a bright, beautiful soul here to evolve. And this experience is all part of that evolution.
I love that. Couldn't have said it better. Amazing. Amazing. Susan, you are a delight. You are truly just like one of the best people. I'm just so excited for you and your journey. And thank you for sharing all of your amazing stories with us today. We're just very proud of you and proud of your vulnerability and honesty. And, you know, we always believe here at Fresh Starts, when you can share your stories, that it helps. It's the guidebook for other people. Right. So thank you for being here today and chatting.
Thanks for being the impetus for the conversation, for the beauty that you're sharing with the planet, and for this.
Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here and we're proud of you. Until next time, brave one.
A Fresh Story is brought to you by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to start again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at freshstartsregistry.com/podcast.